Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 291. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
And we're hopping along down here in Lakeville.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, 291. We're heading to episode 300.
I know, wow. Just like my weight. And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
How you doing?
It's kind of a little... What kind of music was that? Sort of a around the campfire sort of a thing?
Well, actually, no, it is a blues song. You'll have to hear the whole thing at the end. Okay. But it's a Christmas blues song.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. So, but you got to get into it. You got to listen to it.
This is the blues like the Christmas, season.
That's right. That's right. Oh, man. Well, I know someone who is not singing the blues, and it's you, Mr. Wilson.
Yeah.
So,
Not singing the blues at all.
Yeah. There's a little buzz about BuzzFeed buying HyperIQ.
It's true. We're all thousandaires.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, everybody was wondering why there were the his and her Teslas in your driveway. And yeah. You called me and said, want to see the new jet at Flying Cloud?
Actually, I don't call anybody anymore. I have my people do that.
That's right. Well, it's kind of cool though that they want to open an office here.
It was obviously the culmination of a lot of discussion that we had for a long time with the folks at BuzzFeed. You know, BuzzFeed has been part of HyperIQ, or you know, HyperIQ has worked for BuzzFeed in various capacities for probably the last 2 years, year and a half. We started out working on their iOS team, and then expanded into their Android team. And you know, at the same time, my former director of technology, Ryan Johnson, who was with us back in 2013.
He went there, right?
Yeah, he took a position as VP of mobile there. So we had that tie-in as well, obviously. And then there's some history with other, you know, members of the management and ownership team that, you know, has some roots in Minneapolis or family or something like that. So there's actually, BuzzFeed has, a few other employees that are based here because they have a very large, team of full-time, engineers, but some of them are remote. So
I would assume they have content people too, everywhere.
Yeah. I can't speak to the content team. I can't speak to the editorial side. I don't know exactly all of the places that they have. Obviously they have major offices in New York, LA and London, but, we're going to be very, very tech focused here. And BuzzFeed in Minneapolis is all about technology. That will be those people that will focus on building the things that BuzzFeed uses to do what they do best. And that's provide, you know, content, entertainment, news, that sort of thing. So we'll be building the things that make that happen.
Yeah. Does that include web stuff or just mobile?
You know, there'll probably be some web folks at some point as we kind of spread out. But, you know, obviously the HyperIQ talent acquisition was really about building up the mobile team. There's a very, very solid, very aggressive mobile strategy plan for BuzzFeed. That was outlined in a bit of a interview with Jonah Peretti, who's the CEO of BuzzFeed. Check that out on The Verge. I think we'll probably have a link for that, but I'll make sure we put that in there.
Yeah.
So it's really about building mobile. You know, we have other plans for other mobile applications beyond the core BuzzFeed app, and there's some big things planned. So,
well, I was poking around a little bit after this came to the fore. And one thing I didn't know was this. There's an article from The Guardian in January of 2013 that BuzzFeed announces $19.3 million in funding as it transforms internet advertising.
Yep.
And, there's a lot of buzz about BuzzFeed, but there's also a lot of competition, but it's just kind of an interesting model. Anyway.
Well, you know, what's really exciting about BuzzFeed is the way that they sort of crack the code in monetizing, online content, you know, whether it's sponsored content or integrated content. I think it's pretty exciting, some of the things that they've done to, you know, manage and build the advertising platform. It does change how advertising is used in this style of content. So that's kind of really exciting. And that's sort of the secret sauce of BuzzFeed.
I'm wondering if I can interrupt. I'm wondering if we should sue them because they took all these pages right out of Minovate's playbook. With all the advertising on our website.
Why have we not sued them for that? Because the amount of money that we make is obscene. What, $2-3 at least?
I know. Well, they have their listicles and we have our mysticals. So, see, they took it right out of our playbook.
That's right. See,
Tim, would you get on that, please?
I will.
As our legal expert.
Absolutely.
All right.
Hey, Phil, I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
First of all, congratulations. I think it's great news. You mentioned Ryan, who's now the VP of mobile. Yep. I assume he stayed in Minneapolis then? He didn't go to New York?
No, he's in New York. He's based in New York.
Oh, he did? Oh, yes, okay. He made the big move, huh?
Yes, he made the move. It was an opportunity for me. Yeah, I was really, really sad to see Ryan leave HyperIQ because I really, he was just a great yin to my yang. And he was just really very, very solid, smart guy, strategist, great programmer, great sense of humor. He was obviously a great catch for the guys at BuzzFeed, and they recognized it right away as soon as he started working on their iOS app for them. So I just think he's one of the smarter guys in mobile, and we'll look forward to working with him regularly now as far as.
Yeah.
On Slack with him every day. So,
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So my real question was recruiting sounds like a big deal. If you guys are going to ramp up to 30 people here, is that going to fall to you? Or, well, I'm sure there are recruiters at BuzzFeed headquarters that do a lot of that heavy lifting, right?
We actually don't start taking over or start taking over. I kind of sound like Robert when he sold Geek Squad to Best Buy. He was saying things like, when we bought Best Buy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
when we bought BuzzFeed, we don't actually start operating under the BuzzFeed umbrella. We don't work for BuzzFeed until the end of January as we try to, we've got a lot of projects for clients that we need to finish up and take care of. Sure. So, in that time also, we'll be talking about strategy. We'll be talking about, the recruiting goals, which are aggressive. Yes, very aggressive, but we're well on our way as far as doing recruiting and talking to people. And we have some hires that will roll out here pretty soon anyway. And we've got some really good things going.
Well, but, and then office space, because I heard about the leverage buyout of the IDS tower. And no?
Yeah, nothing says hip and cool like the IDS tower.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so all the hipsters are down there now.
Yeah, right.
But you'll be in Cocoa for a while yet, but maybe not for too long.
Well, when you've got 30 people, Cocoa is very much a smaller company, smaller startup vibe, but there's also some opportunities at Cocoa that we're looking into. But we are looking very, really kind of around the entire downtown area and North Loop, obviously North Loop, Northeast, downtown, all very popular and growing spots as they renovate, facilities and buildings. It's pretty exciting. We've seen some really cool spaces.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah. Well, that's great. The lady who sent me the news release in New York, Christina DeRusso, their communications manager, I saw one of her tweets saying, by the way, we're hiring engineering jobs like, whoa, right now. Help us build BuzzFeed.
She's great,
all
by the
over
way.
The place. Yeah.
I got to interface with a few of the folks. Interface. Sorry, talking a little bit there too techie.
Corporate.
I can't believe I said that. That's corporate speak.
Yes.
I've talked to a lot of folks there that have been a lot of fun to deal with. And, as you can imagine, there's a very solid sense of humor around the offices of BuzzFeed.
So. Yeah, it must be a great place. Yeah. Hopefully you get to go out there once in a while, huh?
Yeah, we hope so, right?
Where do they office anyway?
New York, yeah.
Manhattan.
They're right in Manhattan, yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
And I think it's, I think the Flatiron District.
Sure. That's what I thought.
Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty exciting. It was a solid, good move for us at this point in time. It wasn't on our radar at all to be, you know, a company that was going to, you know, look to be acquired or move or, you know, make any changes there. Like, you know, the goal of HyperIQ was really to grow to be maybe a 10 or 15 person, you know, mobile development shop and do a lot of project work and, you know, just be a great place to work and, you know, not to be too big for, you know, we didn't want to be the next Nerdery or we didn't want to be the next MentorMate. You know, we very much wanted to be a more of a boutique style. So this sort of kind of came out of nowhere for us, kind of a little out of left field, but it really is a huge opportunity and it works very well for the lifestyle of my partners and co-owners in the business, you know, Graham Wood and Josh Walker. It's a solid opportunity for all of us. So we're pretty darned excited.
So, you should be. Yeah. And you're going to be another one of those success stories of graduating out of COCO, of which there have actually been several already. I was talking about that the other day and learned about another one I didn't even know about called Anaplan.
Yes, Anaplan graduated out of there a while back and then Lead Pages and
Well, and W3i had, and, you know, mobile realty apps. I mean, there have been a number of them already. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's great. Go Minneapolis.
Yeah, and that I think that's the one thing that I, when asked about a quote for the story, it's like, that's the great thing here, guys, is that, you know, we always talk about, oh, this tech startup had to leave Minneapolis. They had to go to the Valley or they moved to Washington or whatever. And, you know, this is a company, BuzzFeed, is saying, look, we realize there's these great technology people and the great tech community in Minneapolis, and we want to take advantage of it. In fact, we believe in it so much, we don't want to just hire people out of there. We want to hire people, keep them
here. Yeah, that's awesome. And that word will spread in New York, I'm sure, because they know how to spread buzz, shall we say.
It's so true.
Yeah. So, you know, when this next article that we were going to talk about came out about the Minneapolis getting the Bloomberg Innovation Team grant, when I first saw the headline, I thought, hey, cool. It's, you know, it's another technology incubator kind of story, and it's not.
Nope.
At all. In fact,
I almost took it out of the lineup, but I thought it was notable.
Well, because it's innovation, and there will be technology around it and so on, but it's really about making city services work better and work across the board for all the communities within the city. And so from that standpoint, it's like, what?
Well, I mean, it's good that we're getting $900,000.
Yeah, locally. Very true.
That's, you know, $900,000 that the taxpayers don't have to fork over. So hopefully the money will be used to make this city a better city.
Right.
Yeah, and that's $900,000 a year for up to 3 years.
That's right.
Yep. So
nice.
And you know, this stuff matters because, excuse me, last night we were in downtown St. Paul, went to a play at a theater, and you know, they really roll the carpets up in St. Paul at night. I mean, it's beautiful. It's a great city, but there, it's just like you could shoot a cannon off down there and not hit anybody and nobody'd hear it.
The folks at NPR like it quiet. So if you could just keep it down.
Exactly. Stop those trains rolling by.
You know, you get all the public, you get all the public broadcasters down there. They're like, shh.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
Speaking of that, did you see that big TPT studio announcement?
Yeah.
They're going to be totally redoing it over there, and it's a big construction project.
That's right. Kim Gerritsen tweeted that. He's on the board of TPT.
Well, you know, public broadcasting is where it's at if you want really nice stuff, let me tell you.
Well, there's no question they've got some dough.
Yes.
But
it's all about public support, baby.
Well, I have to admit that the funniest thing ever was going into the studio where they shoot Almanac on Friday nights. And it is so small and it is so run down, the stuff that you don't see on camera, you know, the tiles all scuffed up and, you know, the set has seen better days and you can't see any of that on TV. It's amazing, even in high def. So
They know how to hide it. Yeah. They're pros over
there.
Maybe
their new studio will look awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope it will look better than the Almanac set right now.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, guys, It's like, you know, Nixon was there and said, don't change anything till I get back.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So, let's see what else is happening.
Nerdery.
The nerdery is getting into the education business.
Yep. Absolutely.
They've launched, what are they calling it? Prime?
They're calling it Prime.
Prime. That's right. Yep.
And so their objective is
a digital academy. Yeah. To train folks to go to work.
Yep.
In the software development world.
So. Well, I think what was so impressive was the list of 30 companies and organizations that have committed to hire graduates or have apprenticeships at their facilities. I mean, this is a nice lineup.
Yes, it is.
Sport Engine, Thomson Reuters, Minnesota Cup, Olson, the ad agency, on and on. I mean, it's, and 3M. So this is a good commitment from the community, business community, that they're interested in fomenting some talent here, and continuing to grow it. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I see Mark Hurlburt is the one running it, moving over from Nerdery to do that full time.
Yep.
He was their, I guess, most recently chief strategy officer, but was head of marketing and communications for them. He's been there for 10 or more years, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, good for him.
And so then our pals, I have not connected with Doug Olson for a while, but looks like our displaced Microsoft developers found homes, Graham.
Yeah, that story landed in my lap actually via the healthcare company out of Texas that has set up shop here in town with a outfit called, a new entity called Smart Social Media. And it's... it's a wholly owned subsidiary of this Texas-based company, which is called Next Wave Health, run by a really interesting character named Ivo Nelson, who's a former IBMer and I think Perot Systems, and is a real visionary in new ideas to transform healthcare. And he's a big proponent of social media making a big difference in healthcare, which I find fascinating. And so I just happened to hear about this story and I thought, well, I'll be darned. You know, we knew about Doug Olson's shop, unfortunately getting shut down by Microsoft. We heard about that. What was that, in October maybe or September?
Yeah, it's been a while.
And somewhere between 30 and 40 software engineers lost their jobs. But this outfit, Smart Social Media, is now employing about 20% of them. So what would that be? About, I don't know, 6 or 8 or 10 or somewhere in that neighborhood. And
Graham doesn't want to do math this morning.
No, I can't deal with it.
No math.
But anyway, that looks like an interesting story. And I hope to get this Ivo Nelson to town to speak about social media in healthcare. That would be a great topic for Mini Analytics.
It sure would.
Yeah. Another interesting developer story in Minneapolis this week, in addition to Phil's BuzzFeed story.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So I know I put this link in here, but Tim, I got to get your take on this. That the Target CEO makes leadership changes to emphasize innovation and digital. I mean, do you really think that's the future of, I mean, not innovation, obviously, but digital itself? Do you really think that's the future of Target? Or do you think they have no choice?
Well, yeah, no, they've got to definitely build their presence online, and that's part of this. But they're also doing a lot of innovative things in mobile, as we talked about last time.
Right.
And he's committed to extending that, extending what they're doing on their website with e-commerce. And I think it's just to make the entire shopping experience at Target as frictionless across all the different ways that you can buy stuff. So whether it's in the store or online or what have you, it's good to see that he's taking, some pretty direct action here only a few months after he took over.
Well,
he's busy creating centers of excellence too. So, you know, if you're you're in the plaque producing business or the certificate producing business, I bet you there's a gold mine there at Dargo right now. So they can start awarding things to the employees of, you know, the center of excellence.
Well, that's why it was, the one thing that stuck out at me in this article was they discussed, this Casey Carl, who's Target's president of Omnichannel, is going to take on the newly created role of chief strategy and innovation officer and will report directly to the Cornell, the CEO. And,
He'll oversee the Center of Excellence in Data Analytics and Business Intelligence.
Yeah,
they're huge in analytics. Target is unbelievable.
The whole omnichannel thing. I mean, SPS Commerce here locally. I'll put a link in the show notes to the post that I did after their omnichannel event, Omnichannel 14, that was held back in May. So I guess from that standpoint, it's clear that pretty much every retailer is looking at every channel, and because they have to.
Yep. Right? They've got to. That's how they've got to fight Amazon, you know?
Yeah. Well, I just look at what my daughter and her friends do in terms of how they shop, and all they care about is once they find what they want, then it's a matter of going online and hunting down the best possible price. And they'll buy it wherever they can get the best possible price.
Yep.
So
I've been doing a lot of that myself lately. Yeah. Cause I'm sure not going out to the stores much.
Well, just out of curiosity, what percentage of your shopping this year is from online?
Me? 98%.
Yeah, really.
Really?
It's pretty high for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost all of it.
I've had so many deliveries to my front door. They're wearing, holes in my front yard,
Yeah.
Well, and the ones that you didn't even see
that I've got
here at home. So
wow.
I just swing by Graham's house every morning just to see what's been delivered. So.
Yeah. Right. and grab it off the steps before somebody, steals it. But yeah. I don't worry about that too much in my neighborhood, but I think it's a problem elsewhere in some places. You got to get those packages, but they'll text you and tell you when it's been delivered. I mean, it's crazy, So I saw some people go rushing home to get their package, But since I work at home, I just open the door and bam, there it is. No more going out to stores.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go buy a computer today at the Mall of America because of some other reasons. But
I bet it won't be at the Microsoft store.
Probably not.
Oh.
No. But my wife said to me today, she goes, "You're going to go over when? Right after the podcast?" And I said, "Well, yeah, probably." She goes, "Why don't we wait till later? Because it's going to be just a zoo
Saturday
before Christmas. I mean, come on.
Super Saturday.
Yeah. Are you going to the Mall of America? You're going to.
Yeah, it's because we're. My daughter's got a friend at the Apple store who's going to help us out. So.
Well, there you go. And I think, isn't there a protest scheduled there for today, too?
It's really going to be bad.
Oh, no.
Steve. Yeah.
Oh,
geez. It used to be so easy to park on that end where the Apple store is. There was a surface parking lot. But, of course, that's long gone because that Radisson Blue got slammed in there.
Yep.
So, there might not be a real quick way to just jump into the Apple store anymore.
No.
Unless you walk over from like TGI Fridays or something,
I keep thinking about is when I was in my early 20s, a buddy and I, my buddy was a pilot for Republic Airlines at the time. He was at Northwest. They'd bought Republic. And his friend Carl, swear to God, was this swarthy-looking guy who could be cast as a Middle Eastern man from, any country. And so we went to Eddie Webster's Peanut Bar, and Dave and I were dressed in blue suits, and we had wires, just from an old headset or earphones coming out of one of our ears. And Carl was dressed in Arabian the flowing gowns, and we came in. Dave and I were wearing sunglasses, and we were walking around. And this was our way of meeting women. But anyway, yeah. it was just fun. And I keep thinking about doing that at the Mall of America.
It's kind of pitiful is what it is, I think.
Yeah, I know. It was pretty funny at the time, but okay.
Yeah, you should talk to your wife to go before 2, because that's when they plan to do the protest.
Oh, all right.
I'll drop a link in the
notes. It'll be crowded before that, just in video trucks alone. So
there you go. There you go. At the bottom of the notes, there's the timing on the protest. Great. I didn't know that we were going to have one.
Well, yeah. The Bloomington police say they're going to arrest the leaders if it happens. So
excellent, because they don't have a permit, probably, right?
Well, it's private
property.
Yep.
So they can't do that. Interesting.
Yeah. Their goal is that, and God love them for that, because it's like if you're going to do a protest, you want it to be in the way. You want it to be front and center. You don't want, hey, we'll give you a spot across the street outside in a field. Oh, yeah, that'll draw attention.
Yeah.
Yep. So you go inside.
Well,
it'll be kind of a flash mob sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be pretty cold out there. So that's a problem. But hey, here's a segue.
Oh,
speaking of cold,
the hay segue.
There was an article in the Strib, which I read and I thought, seriously, that the article was entitled "Selling the Cold: Minnesota's Tech Community Welcomes Data Centers."
Yeah. I guess I never thought that data centers, people would consider Minnesota or, Iowa of late, because it's cold here half the year. It's like, huh?
I read through this and I went, seriously? I mean, because it's cold here for several months out of the year. And that's going to save energy potentially, because you just pump the cool air in.
But at the same time, it's hot the other part of the year.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It's like, okay. So it's kind of cancels itself out.
And humid too. Yeah, I mean, right. Think of the humidity controls that data centers have to have.
I don't think you're going to ever, because, you're not going to consider dropping a data center in the middle of the desert, but I don't know if, I think the tax breaks and the incentives to build, data centers in specific states is more driven by the, by the money rather than the temperature.
Well, I don't
build centers.
The thing that really drives it is closeness to cheap power.
Cheap power,
That's right, what Facebook and Google and Amazon and everybody else looks at.
And good fiber optic connections to the internet, too.
Right.
Yeah.
The other factor.
Well, what I thought was interesting was I had coffee with a guy yesterday or day before yesterday who spent the first part of his career. He was in the military, in the Air Force, and he signed up just out of the blue, computer training, and ended up going in and was doing assembly level programming because he showed an aptitude for it. And they ended up sending him into Cheyenne Mountain, and he said I lived in basically was in Cheyenne Mountain a mile in where he spent most of his time. He said the only downside with being in there, other than knowing that a nuclear war could happen, you could come out and there'd be nobody left, was the fact that it was like 52 degrees in there all the time. He said I had a jacket on the whole time. So maybe we should have data centers inside mountains.
Yeah, well, they probably do somewhere.
Yeah. Well,
in North Korea. Oh no, let's not go there.
Yeah.
Well, they've got them in bunkers in Holland. The old German World War II era installations. Mm-hmm. That's the one where what was it? WikiLeaks, I think, is hosted.
Oh yeah.
At that one, yeah, where it's it's a hardened bunker.
Yep.
Huh. Well, so Julio had a great article too about this shortwave app.
Yeah.
And
One Radio News.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's the company that makes it. One Radio News.
Right. It's Android only right now. So I guess I'm the only one that can check it out. And it costs $2 if you get the ad-free version, but there's a free version with ads if you want to check it out.
Tim, that's not true, because Parallels Desktop I downloaded the Android app.
So you can run
I'm running the Android apps inside this virtual container.
Ooh, wow. It's not the same, though.
No, I know.
There's no nana nana nanas here. We're all friends.
That's right.
That's right. Well, Stephen Clift was a founder and exec director of eDemocracy.org. And, he's into this, I'm sure, into this whole thing about radio being free and radio being cross country and, Radio Free Europe thing was a big deal during the Cold War because it worked. So having a shortwave radio app is pretty neat because then you can hear things from all over the world.
That's right. I'm looking at it now. It looks like it's got all of the major streaming services. So he's aggregated all of these international streaming stuff all into one interface.
Huh.
I will give it a go, and we'll see if it maybe it's a cool thing of the week for me next week. I don't know.
There you go. Let us know.
I shall.
Great.
So speaking of North Korea.
Oh, it's the speaking of
Here we go.
Wow, yeah. This is the weirdest story. I mean, how this has developed. I mean, there's got to be something else going on because how the FBI determined it was North Korea this quickly is really stumping me.
Well, they claim that they had IP addresses associated with North Korea in the malware that was phoning home.
Right. Oh, that can't be spoofed from anywhere in the world.
No, I know. Yeah. Like I couldn't put an IP address in there that came from North Korea. Yeah, exactly.
I find it very hard to believe it's North Korea. Now it's whoever did this, they're very crafty in making it appear like that because North Korea is not going to say, oh no, it's not us. They're right. They're going to take credit for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But for a country that barely has any electricity, you know, or internet connections, or I don't even know if they are connected to the internet there, to have them have this elite cybersecurity or cyber warfare group is dubious at best. Mm-hmm. Plus, do you think if it really was North Korea, do you think they would go after Sony to stop some stupid movie?
No.
That's sense either. So
yeah, would that be the first thing they do? Yeah.
No, I mean they would have stopped Team America back 10 years ago, which is a hilarious movie, by the way.
Yeah.
which was very critical of
yes,
of Kim's father.
Right.
It's looking a lot like Insiders, you know. Isn't that where the FBI is looking pretty increasingly now is the insider connection, former disgruntled employees.
That would be the first place I would look because this has that written all over it. But they're good enough that they've made it look like it's North Korea or, you know, some other, you know, hacking country, state sponsored hacking, which I'm really dubious. And how they came out so quickly and just blamed it on these guys, this really looks weird.
Yeah,
that's just my opinion. Maybe I'm looking behind this too much, but
I even read where China could, where there's been, you know, conjecture that China could have assisted them with it.
Yeah, that would make a lot more sense in North Korea.
Obviously, they
certainly have the resources to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it's getting so incredibly bad. With all the stuff that's going on with all the hacking. I mean, now we just see that Staples, 1.16 million credit cards were exposed thanks to malware. That's just, the hits just keep on coming.
It's so that's true. Right.
And then this thing about Russian malware infecting 100,000 plus WordPress sites.
Yeah.
And then they named it SoakSoak. What?
Yeah.
Soak,
I had to deal with this one this week because I do use that Revolution Slider plugin from time to time.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I actually have that on the site now, too. So, yeah, I've got a...
So I had to rush around and make sure that we were all in the non-vulnerable versions. The problem with this particular one is it comes bundled with a bunch of themes. So if you go on ThemeForest or one of the other sites and buy a theme, you'll get this bundled in and you'll get the vulnerable version.
Oh, really?
So yeah. So I had to buy the new version and go around and install it various sites.
Well, I'll tell you, just as an aside, the best slider I've ever used, and it doesn't have all of the bells and whistles that you get, you know, it doesn't do layers and all kinds of other stuff that a lot of the commercial sliders will do. But it's responsive and there's a light version. It's called Soliloquy.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you that it is the best slider out there for WordPress. I'll put links in the show notes. But one of the things that I like about it is the fact that the developer is just, I mean, this guy's all over everything like a bad suit. So it's really worth looking at.
Are you saying he wears bad suits?
No, just saying that he's on top of, you know, the forum where you get support and, things of that nature. So I got
like White on Rice.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, if we're gonna send shout outs to plugin developers, I it would be remiss for me not to mention Meteor Slides, which is developed by a local developer here, which is also very lightweight, and I use it as much as I can because I know that I can always give Josh a call and he'll give me very good service to try to figure stuff out. So. I will put this one in the notes. You should check it out because he developed it. We've used it in our overnight website challenges in years past, he's kept it up. And
see, I didn't even know about this one.
Oh yeah, it's a good one.
Do you have a pro version?
No, it's
so you can give money. Okay,
it's a free thing.
Huh.
So where are these? Okay, so I'm throwing this one in the notes as well.
Got it. Nice. Yeah, I like there's also not that we're going to get into the plugin show, but there's also a local company that does probably the best real estate plugin for WordPress. And I can't remember the name, but I'll put a link in the show notes to them too.
I think it's WP Realty.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
And what does it do? What do you mean real estate?
You can present multiple listings automatically on websites, on your website.
Okay. Yep. So it pulls right from the IDX API. Yep. So you just define what the pull is. So if you're a realtor, you can say, well, I want to have all the listings that I have, but I want them on my own website. And so you can then populate your own website with all your own listings. Or if you're in a group with multiple realtors and you want to populate all the realtors, you can do that. I mean, it's pretty cool. Very nicely done. They also have themes that are real estate centric, and they're here. I think they office over by Lake Nokomis somewhere.
Are you thinking of hanging out a shingle to sell houses on Connect the Dots now? Or
yeah, what? Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, in my spare time.
Yeah, you got a lot of that.
In my spare time when I'm trying to figure out how to migrate a 12 gigabyte WordPress database that is got all kinds of corruption in it to another server. Mm. Oh, my God.
Say, speaking of that, Minovate went down for a little while. A few days ago.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for pointing that out, Graham.
Yeah. Well, I never asked you about it, but I was trying to find a link and I had somebody trying to find that link on the Microsoft developers. And it's like, what's with your site? The link doesn't work.
Well, yeah. Well, the,
Steve was messing moving, around.
No, I was migrating to a new server.
Oh, okay.
So I've got, you know, 25 sites and I migrated them all to a SSD drive based.
Oh yeah, you were talking about that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's and so rather than having to manage our own dedicated servers, using VPS now, which with the SSD is there's only a 0.5 second additional latency for the request to travel through the network in the data center to get to the VPS over the dedicated server. So it's like, yeah, I'm willing to do the half second to save, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. $500 a month. And anyway,
there you go.
Yeah. So what other stories are out there? Oh, you know what? I saw this one that, I keep hearing this over and over and over again from especially all the millennials in my life who say, oh, Facebook. No, I don't, I'm not there. And yet I see posts from them constantly. So when they do an Instagram picture and they post the picture to Facebook and Twitter and, you know, wherever else. And then they're on there and you can see, oh, they were just there 2 minutes ago and yada, yada, yada. But the report was in Business Week that said Facebook is getting less and less cool, at least among teens. And yet I'm seeing them on again in my family and extended family like crazy. Are you guys seeing that too?
Like, oh, yeah. The teens are kind of losing interest in Facebook?
But yeah, they lost interest years ago.
Yeah, but they're there anyway, just because everybody else is, right?
Yeah, they have to be there to a certain extent, but the messaging apps just took over their lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Well, Snapchat and...
WhatsApp.
Well, yeah, that and Instagram, all of those have been... what they prefer to use.
Yeah, sure. Right. It's all messaging stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's visual messaging stuff as opposed to writing snippy text. But I've also seen, especially as my son has gotten into the workforce here recently, that he's using Twitter a little bit more than he did. He always thought Twitter was kind of stupid, which.
Huh. Yeah. It's,
maybe as you get old, it doesn't look as stupid as. It appears when you're young.
Everybody thinks Twitter is stupid until they catch on, and then they can't give it up. You know, it's like that's the way it goes. I hear that every day from people. You know, and then all of a sudden, bam, they're all over it. You know, but say that another thing relating to Facebook that I just saw online this morning is apparently they're automatically enhancing your photos now.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably better than what they have been doing, which is they automatically, you know, compress the thing at about 70%. So your pristine, beautiful photos are all aliased and look like crap.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So that's bad.
They're messing with something there.
Yeah.
They want to take over the world. But, you know, in my world, I just don't pay that much attention to Facebook because most of my clients are B2B. And, you know, it really hasn't had a big impact for B2B companies. I'm talking company pages now, you know.
Right.
It will, I hope. I think they want it to. I mean, they better.
I think it's more of a personal thing. So business to consumer stuff works there. Like the wineries that I work with, we get very good engagement on Facebook.
Oh yeah.
But the B2B stuff I do with Oracle, you know, LinkedIn is a much better place for connecting with customers and potential customers. So.
Yep. Yep. And for startups, too, and LinkedIn and Twitter, you know, I mean, engaging with whoever you can engage with, you know, media in particular, you know, startups looking to get attention, that sort of thing. Yep. They all have their different sort of application, you know. And then there's Google Plus, but I don't know if
they're
we want to go there.
There's the Google. What was that again?
Has anybody been on Google Plus lately?
What was the service?
Or? Is that like Apple Ping?
Oh God, good one. Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. You know, I know we don't do our prediction show until is that next week already, guys?
Well, next week,
next Saturday.
Yeah. Oh my! But so, does anybody think Google Plus is going to go away, or are they just going to keep it around?
Boy, that's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question.
It's going to be like they did with Orkut. You know, it was like very popular in Brazil, but nowhere else, and they kept it alive for years before they killed it.
Well, where is it popular? Where is Google Plus popular?
It's popular internationally.
Uganda.
It is? Okay.
Yeah, it is. Seriously, it is.
Yeah.
So I think it's used enough that they'll continue to keep it alive. Now, whether they add to the service, you know, is another story.
Right.
Well, you know, what I tell my clients is it's going to help your SEO juice a lot. So you've got to be on it just for
that's the thing, yeah.
It's kind of like Microsoft and Bing, you know. Yeah. Is it going to take over? No, but it's worth doing because it keeps them, you know, in the game, and it's linked to all of their services, and it's a pretty good search engine. It's not as good as Google, but you know, it's not bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing. So yeah, they'll never be Facebook or even Twitter, but it's not too bad.
Well, we shall see.
I guess it's better than Orkut. So they're making progress.
Yep.
And Buzz, remember them? Google Buzz.
Oh, that's right. God, I forgot about that.
Well, yeah, Google Wave and all that. Yeah, it's just, well.
Yeah, they sort of happened about the same time, didn't they? And then they both sort of died off.
Yep.
No, they were killed off.
And we should do a show where we talk about all the old failed social networks. You know, remember MySpace and Friendster? Remember those? Back in my day.
Back in my day.
Bebo. Did you see the Bebo guy? The Bebo guy's a freaking billionaire. And lives on Billionaire's Row in Pacific Heights and got this unbelievable house. And he's just relaunched Bebo as something else. You know, he sold it to AOL. And now he's, going to relaunch it. I can't remember what the hell is it going to be, a shopping site or something. I don't know. But yeah, there were a lot of people that made a lot of money in social networks. But then there were a lot that bombed too.
my son, he's a huge video gamer, loves it. I showed him this article because he had not seen this, but the creator of Minecraft, a guy named Marcus Persson, bought an 8-bedroom, 15-bath Beverly Hills mansion for $70 million. Because he sold out his company and, to Microsoft, made a ton of money. And it's like, oh my God, $70 million.
And how old is the guy?
35.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Isn't he from Norway or Sweden or someplace like
that? He's Sweden, yeah.
Sweden, okay. Yep. Why the heck would you want to live in California?
Yeah, really. Well, because
especially Southern California. I guess San Francisco would make sense. Maybe he's going to do another startup, but Southern California.
Well, he's starstruck. The flash and dash.
I guess.
But that's an even more expensive house than the Bebo guys got on Billionaire's Row, I think. So yeah.
I mean, I'm from there, and I wouldn't, if I had a windfall like that, I wouldn't buy a mansion in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, no, it's a concrete jungle.
You'd go buy a 4-bedroom Rambler in Hibbing.
No,
I know you, Tim.
No, I wouldn't. I'd probably get a little flat in Paris.
A flat. You'd get a flat.
Flat in Paris.
Come up to my flat.
Put on a beret and start painting.
Well, with all of your newfound money, Phil, you can come up with your monocle.
Yeah, exactly.
Flat in Paris.
My flat.
In the 7th.
Made possible by my mobile.
That's right.
Schedule some time.
I was doing business in Europe in the mid-90s and then through the late 90s, and I was over there a lot. And they called them handies. They didn't call them mobiles until later. They were called handies.
Oh,
do you have a handy? Like what? Huh.
That's a whole nother. Yeah, handies is a whole other thing to me.
yeah, exactly.
Well, I can't tell you whether I'd rather have that the mobile version. I wouldn't.
Yeah. You'd rather have the neck massage or the handy?
I know. Yeah, I think I'll take the handy.
All right.
Well,
I know what Phil's not going to be doing after the podcast.
What's that?
Is putting up his own version of the Pirate Bay.
Gotta have a little sideline.
Well, so,
I know, but Pirate Bay will not be your sideline.
No.
Yeah. Sure. Well, this thing I just found this morning, and I don't know for anyone listening, if you don't know the Pirate Bay, they have been the most popular file sharing website on Earth, really. And they
possibly be the only place you'll see the interview.
Yeah. Well, it went offline last week because the police raided their data center in Sweden. And so we don't know if that's going to continue on. Not that I've been there very, very frequently. I've gone there every once in a while and looked. But what was really interesting is they've released their code into open source with the objective of allowing anyone to start their own Pirate Bay. So having torrents available everywhere, anybody running it.
It doesn't have to be like copyrighted material. You can use BitTorrent for legitimate reasons. Like if you're a software developer, you could put your Linux distribution ISOs up and whatnot.
Yep.
So it makes sense, and it's good to see, you know, another option out there that's easy to do. Now it'll be used for ill, I'm sure.
Right. Well,
as I'm well,
sure it will be.
Yep.
But, let's forget about doing a medical marijuana shop. Let's set up a movie torrent website. What do you think, guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why not? Entrepreneurship. Yeah, there you go.
Phil's quiet because he's taking notes. He's already sketching out a business plan, aren't
you? I am. It's, you know, this could work. This could be big. I'm telling you, this could be big. You know, what I'm really doing is, you know, I'm looking at the time and I'm thinking to myself, geez, I'm kind of jonesing for a little security. What we need here is a security tip or something.
Steve's security tip of the week.
Hey, the horses are back.
I feel much better already.
Well, so I'm as I always am, paying attention to what's going on in security. And the Washington Post released an article that these German researchers had discovered a flaw that could let anyone listen to your cell calls. So not being freaked out about just the NSA or GCHQ in Britain or whatever, but that anyone could. And I was so fired up about this that I spent about half an hour doing a little more research, which led to a whole post because I was going to do the security tip. And I thought I got way too much to put in the show notes. So I did a separate post called Why Encrypt Your Voice Calls End to End.
So how do you do that there, Steve?
So the way that you do it is there's a lot going on actually in voice encryption. A lot of it's still pretty doggone geeky, but there are apps now that allow you to do it easily. So the guy Phil Zimmerman that started Pretty Good Privacy and he's got some open source project. He morphed into a company called Silent Circle, and we've talked about them before. Well, they have Silent Phone, an app for iOS and Android. You pay a subscription fee, but you can call out encrypted, but also you can call silent phone to silent phone encrypted. So that's one. They also have a phone, an Android phone called the Black Phone. So if you wanted to have everything secure, you can. But then there are apps for both iOS and Android and other platforms as well, like Signal, which is done by the makers of an Android one called Red Phone. And so Signal can talk to Red Phone users and back and forth, and the calls are encrypted. And I was really interested in all the things that were out there because Verizon has just announced a calling app, but at the same time, they did say there was a back door in there for law enforcement. So yeah, it's encrypted, but there's a back door. It's like, seriously?
Well, if you look at the Silent Circle thing, that's at minimum $12.95 a month.
Right.
So you're going to have to put that on top of your regular cell service. So
that's correct. But the free apps like Signal and Red Phone, for example,
yeah,
allow you to call other Red Phone users. So Tim, if you had Red Phone and I had Signal on my iPhone, I could call you and you could call me, and the call would be encrypted. And people think, you know, well, geez, you know, like the NSA has in their welcome sign, I put a picture in there, click on it. It says, welcome to the Utah data center. That's their $2 billion facility outside Salt Lake that is gathering all of the digital information they can possibly get their hands on. It says, welcome to the Utah data center. If you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear.
Ooh.
That's their slogan on the sign. Ooh.
That's pretty ominous.
Well, it's not only ominous, it's also ironic because it's not true. Because what if you're in a company and you want to have a call and one person's in London or one person's, you know, in Budapest, Hungary, and you want to have a conversation? Well, now, because of this flaw that these German researchers found, it's called SS7, and it's a way to allow phone calls easily to move from tower to tower and things of that nature. But now you can hack into that, and so you can gather calls, which means you could hack into it outside of a building and gather and listen in on cell calls. So if you want to keep things private, for whatever reason, you can do so with these apps. And that's my tip of the week.
Or you can use the cone of silence.
There you go. That
remember,
is cool.
Remember the from Get Smart.
Get Smart. Silence. That's right.
Get Smart. There you go. Oh,
I forgot about the cone of silence. Damn.
Yeah. I'll bet we'll see the cone of silence in the artwork for this week's episode.
We could, although I really like the one of you, Tim, in the Vikings garb.
In the Viking garb.
That was a good one.
Didn't you like my my tattoos? Those are really good.
Those are good. Those are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Oh, my God. All right. Hey, let's talk about cool things of the week.
Yeah, let's start with Graham. Let's start with Graham.
Yeah, I got a good one. This is kind of a bro thing, though. Yeah. So to all you female listeners out there, that's right. I'm talking to all three of you. You might want to cover your ears now. This is, I got a PR pitch on this that I couldn't believe. This is a Kickstarter project called the Key Caddy. And the PR pitch subject line was, first they save your wallet, now they're saving your balls. I kid you not. He got my attention. But anyway, it's a Kickstarter project that's doubled its modest goal of 7,500 and 26 days to go. And it looks like a pretty cool little deal. You carry your keys on that folds in and carries nicely in your pocket. And you're not poking yourself with your key.
It's got a thumb drive on it too, which is kind of interesting.
That's kind of cool.
But yeah, the bottle. You got to. This is an Australian company that's doing this, or whatever.
Oh, they're Aussie. No wonder. Aussie,
yeah, right? They are.
No wonder the PR pitch. Now I get it. Those crazy Aussies.
And it's got a beer opener. That is awesome. leave it to the Aussies.
Well, and then they've got a picture in their pitch. Their value prop, 6 devastating statistics that prove key rings are overdue for an upgrade. And there's a photo of a guy in the middle grabbing his junk. And so 55% have been poked in the balls by keys in their pocket. I mean, I've never been poked in my balls with the keys. You know, it's like, well, what?
You know, you don't wear those tight fitting jeans that Phil and I are prancing around in.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So that true. Hurts, baby. We're so trendy.
So you don't have that problem with cargo pants either. So, you know,
that's right.
But anyway, I thought it was funny. And the PR pitch, I mean, definitely is getting attention, I'm sure. So that's my cool thing of the week.
Cool. Tim, what's yours?
$32 Australian if you want to buy it for the basic model.
Yeah. Yep. Right. Such a bargain.
It's kind of like turn your keys into a Swiss Army knife.
All right. So mine is a little bit different as than normal. Whenever there's technology innovation and drinking going on, it You're gets there. My attention. Yeah, I'm there. So mine is the Neat Ice Kit, which is a way to make ice for cocktails in your home that's as pristinely as pure as possible. You know, if you go to a good bar, they have really clear ice, and it melts slower. And you know, if you're getting scotch or whatever with this block of ice in it, it's important that the quality of the ice be good. And so,
because you don't want it to water down the drink.
Right? Well, you don't. And so if you get like pure ice, it actually melts slower than, you know, ice with a lot of impurity or air in it. And so what this thing does is you put water in, you put it in your freezer, and it's like a silicone sleeve mold thing.
Right.
And as it freezes, all of the air and other impurities go to the bottom. Then when you unmold it, you actually split the block and you have one pristine, clear ice block. And then the other side of it can either be discarded or you can bang it up and just use it as crushed ice.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit spendy, but it's a good gift.
How much is it?
It's like, I think it's $40.
Wow.
Yeah, if you get 2, it's 80. So what is it? $60.
And you get free shipping if anything over 50. Yeah.
Right. So it's out of stock now, unfortunately.
But oh, no.
The single mold kit is 60, and you get 2 molds for 80, which is actually the best value. But it says available on Amazon.com. So let's click the link and see. And yeah, it's available on Amazon.
Well, you know, not only is that cool, but if you look at that link and go to the kit page, then scroll down to the bottom and look at the products. So these are the guys from Austin, Texas that make the Glyph.
Yep.
Which is the little holder for the iPhone. But I didn't know this other stuff. They have a slow-mo app called Slow Fast Slow that's those slow things down to 1/16th speed, which is pretty cool. And then they have this other one, Framographer, which is essentially time-lapse and stop-motion movies on your iPhone. Just really, really clever stuff.
And they're obviously drinkers, too, because they've got not only this, but the simple syrup kit. So
What is the simple syrup kit? I'm just clicking on that
now. That's how you make your own simple syrup.
There you go.
Fun.
There you go.
Very
it's got
nice.
It's basically just a jar that's marked where you put the water and how much sugar you put in.
Huh. Yeah.
I mean, it's 25 bucks. Come on.
This is not you would think you would see stuff like this over a kitchen window in there in Uptown, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You would think so. Well, Phil, what's your cool thing, buddy?
BuzzFeed. I think it's just the coolest thing ever.
There you go.
Really? Is that a website?
You may have heard of it. Yeah. Well, that obviously I think that's cool. But I was cruising through, a lot of we get a lot of obviously we subscribe to a lot of feeds. So we get a lot of stuff that you never really could afford, but is really cool. I really got a kick out of Audi's self-driving RS7. And it's in this particular article that I'll put a link into is talking about calling it the anti-Google car. So imagine an autonomous vehicle going 150 miles an hour around the track.
That's what I saw. It's autonomous, but it goes 149 miles an hour. It's whoa, what?
Holy crap.
Yeah. I'd like them to make sure there are no bugs in that before they put that on the road.
That sucks.
Holy buckets.
A little bit of malware. Oh
my God.
But, I'm a big fan of the Audis anyway, and especially like the RS7 and the RS8. What great looking cars. But
yeah, they are.
But I thought that was very cool.
Wow. Well,
all right, Steve.
So my cool thing of the week, I normally almost always will do some gadgets or a piece of software or something like that. But this for some reason really, really grabbed me. And I clicked on it to see if it was our local company, Stratasys, that makes 3D printers and so on. And it wasn't. But still, the thing is, this is just such a great story. NASA emailed a socket wrench to astronauts up in the space station. And so that they were able to print it on the 3D printer that they have in the space station. So they have a zero-G printer made by a company called Made in Space, which I've never heard of. But they needed a socket wrench with certain dimensions and all that. And so they basically sent them the 3D model, and they could print it from up in space.
They don't tell you in the story is that it costs like $4 million to print this socket wrench.
No,
exactly.
I'm just kidding.
I know. Okay. All right.
That's an old Apollo joke.
There you go.
Oh, it is. Yeah. Okay.
I love NASA humor.
For all you old timers out there, remember the Apollo missions?
That's right.
And an Apollo joke. Hammers.
But isn't that, I think what's cool about this is that, imagine the day when, you're up there and somebody, has some issue with whatever, and they've got to fix something, and they can just send them the plans for the parts. I just think it's pretty cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah. Anyway,
much cheaper to email it than to ship it.
Yep. So upcoming events, gentlemen, in 2015, because we're pretty well over with 2014. I don't think there's anything else happening this year. Oh, yeah, there's some holidays in there. But anyway, and our prediction show. We should mention we'll be doing our prediction show next week, episode 292. And but EduCelerate Twin Cities is going to do another event January 14th.
Right.
And that looks like, again, if you have any interest in education technology, you'll want to go to this because it's a demo. Two event, they call it. So it's entrepreneurs in the education space showcasing and pitching their apps and products and stuff directed at the education sector. So good event. And it's managed and was set up by a guy who's a partner at Oppenheimer, Wolf & Donnelly. Steve Welvang is his name. Anyway. So that should be a cool event. Who and date night, Graham? You had put this in here, right?
Graham had to bail, but yes, he did. I'm sure he did because it's an analytics beast. Yes.
That's right. That's right.
And the then CEO of OkCupid and the UCLA mathematician who hacked the site.
Yes.
Talking about dating analytics.
Yep. Gotcha. And then our, there's some mobile thing going on.
Yeah, it's a mobile march. It's scheduled for March 26th. So we are, you know, obviously the early bird tickets are on sale, but also would love to have people submit if you'd like to present at Mobile March. Just click on Be a Speaker. We would love to get your proposal for what you would like to present.
Yeah. Well, and so, then there's a stuff. There's an Internet of Things event that'll be happening in April. And
the IoT Fuse, which IoT is Fuse. Put together by our friend Justin. Justin
and others like Steve Borsch. I'm involved in it. So it should be a cool event.
And then Twin Cities Tech Pulse in 2015.
And I don't know about that event. What's the...
No idea. No idea.
Okay.
Click on the link. We'll figure it out.
Figure it out.
Exactly.
All right.
So lots going on this week. It'll be a little bit of a slower week, but don't forget to join us as we make our predictions for 2015. Next week on...
The Minivate Gang Podcast.
Have a good week.
Thanks. Take care.
Cool. Very cool.
Oh, Chris. Come on, see ya. Oh, Chris. Come on, see ya. I have a bit home, baby. Daddy raised the Christmas tree, girl. Kids in the snow, playing with the toy. Oh, kids in the snow, y'all. Playing with the toy. I'm a bit home, dog. I'm gonna be there. La, la, la.